I came top in English like 2 years on the run, and they never thought it was me. All the other Smiths used to get congratulated except me. I like that. It's good being a Smith sometimes. You get away with murder, you know.
Yeah, we are not the white crap that talks back. We are the four, we were spinning, we were stepping. Come out, as in from heaven. The difference between you and us is that we have brains. Cause we're not the white crap, but we talk back.
How are you doing? All right.
Bang, fucking bang, the mighty ball.
John Peel. Time for me to warn you that it is possible that in the course of the next hour and 55 minutes or so, you may hear some rough language or be introduced to concepts you find unwholesome. If you fear that this is a possibility, clearly you should be listening to something else. Regular listeners will know there are a few words in English finer than tonight, a new session from the fall, and that's what we've got for you. We think it's the 24th, but we're not absolutely certain about it. Before I play you the first track, an email from Chris Goodhead, the first of the night. Chris says, a quick message to say that I've had a bloody awful week so far. Nevertheless, I'm still excited at the prospect of another Mighty Fall session. I've been to a couple of recent shows, and they've got a really good song that mentions Harold Shipman. They've been playing Walk Like a Man. Their old bass player is now the guitarist. It's all business as usual, really. Chaos, but good chaos.
What's doing now? What are you doing?
Just trying to tune.
Don't need tuning up. Just fucking play it, isn't it?
He's a traditionalist.
When they start saying they like the fall, it's usually that they've run out of ideas. You remember Wet, Wet, Wet saying that, you know, they want to concentrate on doing our own stuff, a bit like the fall. It's like, shut the fuck up. You know? Totally
wired. No one exemplifies attitude more than Mark E. Smith. He is attitude personified.
Mark's an inspirational character and also an awkward get, you know.
His behaviour has become kind of more mystifying and erratic since I left. I mean, people do use the word genius quite a lot, but I do think he's a genius.
I think he's got talent, he's got a charisma, like it or not. He's not a nice guy. Here is
books. We don't know anything about him as fans. All we know is this absolutely distinct stage persona and voice.
I think you can compare any other bands to The Fall, because nobody really sounds like The Fall. And when bands do sound like The Fall, you just kind of go, well, you're trying to rip off The Fall, fuck off.
With The Fall, you can never be absolutely certain what you're going to get. Sometimes it may not be what you want, but it's still, they're the Fall, it's all you need.
Hopefully this will brighten up your evening for you a bit. From The Fall, Clasp Hands.
He's somewhere at the end, just go do 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 do. Dead sad, you know. Just be yourselves.
That sort of attitude was, you follow me into the business, you know, or go into the army, you know, otherwise you're a waste of bloody time, you know. Yeah, I used to work for my dad in the school holidays, summer holidays, like for about 10 years, when I was 6 or 15, I worked for my dad every bloody school holiday. I used to think he was right, bastards, but either way, it's good, you know. He eventually chucked me out of the house, which I don't like. Because it's like, you know, nowadays they can't get rid of the lads, can they? Stay at home till they're about 35, I don't know, it's terribly awful. must be hard. I couldn't bring up any kids, mate. It's hard with the bloody group. That's enough for me. I formed the group because I wanted to write, you know, music. I was like laid off the docks and all this shit, you know. So it was a way of earning money at the start. First group, it started just as there's like three people: Friel, Brahma, Baines. They realised that the true mission was to be in the Fall. It wasn't taken seriously in them days. In them days, it's a bit like now. You think you've got to have £1 million before you start a group. You know? It was a bit like that then. So I was 76. I was writing a lot, and so it started as like a sort of poetry reader and that, pissing around, really.
Yeah, we all used to meet up and hang out at my flat on Kingswood Road in Prestwich and listen to music.
We were into punk before punk. We were into the garage groups, like the early 60s groups, you know.
In 1974, 75, you could be interested in music like Iggy Pop, and you could be interested in avant-garde jazz and electronic German music, all sorts of strange things. And that was in the air anyway. And I think people were beginning to put bands together anyway that had those kind of weird influences. It just didn't have a focus, it didn't have a name, it didn't really have a sense that it could ever be anything other than local. The Sex Pistols coming up those two times completely shattered all that and made everything intimate and close and doable.
Those gigs galvanised Manchester musicians, or wannabe musicians. People came out of the woodwork. Closet Stooges fans, rabid Captain Beefheart fans, began to touch base with one another and start making their own groups.
In hindsight, you know, they turned out to be Joy Division, they turned out to be The Fall, they turned out to be Morrissey, and turned out to be all sorts of interesting kind of Manchester groups that at the time didn't think that they had it in them to be musicians, to be a group.
So everybody's went to the gig, but I did so well, so fucking what?
Psycho, psycho!
But we got involved in this, like, Northwest Arts thing. It was like a musicians collective. It was like brass bands and bird noises. There's a fella did symphonies out of bird noises.
Anybody could get up and do a performance, so it really suited what the Fall were about at that time.
So we thought we'd just do what we were doing in the bedroom, you know, like reading out poetry over a bass and a guitar. He got a drummer and it's kicked off, you know.
After the Sex Pistols gig, there was lots of strange things happening in odd basement clubs in Manchester. Obviously, the Buzzcocks had started up, and if you went to see Buzzcocks, there would be interesting support groups that had also come about at the same time.
Well, that was a big break, Richard Boone offering us support to the Buzzcocks, because that's when we started doing sort of regular gigs.
They were startling. They had the thrift store styling, totally anti-fashion, with the threadbare sweaters and the awful shirts. They were totally a garage band, and they obviously had it.
Incredibly exciting if you knew Iggy Pop and you knew your Can and you knew your Captain Beefheart, because it seemed to have the same thing going on, this crunching together of strange rhythms and odd shafts of sound just sort of cutting against it like bits of glass, and a really peculiar guy at the front ranting away.
Once Spiral Scratch had been released and we'd been working with The Fall on a live, occasional basis, I thought it was important that their work was recorded too.
Yeah, well, actually, you've got to say this. So the Buzzcocks paid for our first recording. God bless them.
I would have loved to put it out myself. But things around Boscott's got commercially chaotic and I was distracted, so gave them the tapes.
Good evening. Welcome to What's On for World Cup Plus.
I think Richard must have mentioned the band to me. I certainly remember getting a copy of Bingo Master's Breakout, thinking, this sounds bloody weird, this sounds like part of the explosion. And I remember taking a film crew up to a basement in a house in North Manchester in Prestwich.
Music is offensive to a lot of people, you know, and coming from the north, you've got this inoffensive, cap-touching attitude, which we're trying to break out of.
I always think it was more attitude than music. I think that's what the Fall brought to Manchester. And again, they brought this great oppositional thing, which is they loathed wankers like me from South Manchester, and Markey epitomised that.
You see, it's more than just the songs you're playing.
Yeah, I mean, it is more than the songs. I mean, the music is secondary, really. The music scene does not communicate to people. We try to. That's where we fall down.
To this day, I always say, I'm not quite sure whether I like The Fall's music, but I like The Fall. I mean, just Ya Ya, just a song called Ya Ya Industrial Estate. Fantastic.
Originally, I felt, I mean, and I think everybody else would agree with this, that we were just all equal members of a band.
Do you not get tired of being poor, though, lads? I mean,
you are dead tired. Yeah, to not make a living out of it is...
And you don't make a living out of it, do you, at present?
No.
Please give us some money.
I think as The Fall evolved, it emerged as Mark as very definitely, you know, the voice of The Fall.
It was a solo act, but it was a solo act that needed everybody around him. So it had a kind of weird dynamic that he couldn't have done it on his own.
Give me a name then.
I met Kay through a friend. She worked at Prestwich Hospital the same time that I did. And when she split up with the partner, she came to live with me. And at that time, me and Mark were drifting apart. We were splitting up, really. And they got together and she became The Fall's manager.
What do you mean you want some money? What are you talking about? You're pirating my bloody stuff, Tony. What are you talking about? I pay for your equipment.
Kay was actually the tough, abrasive one. She was the boss then. Kay Carroll, hello, love. Hello, lovey. Kay would get very drunk and was even tougher than Mark and would jump on you and attack you and go on about the money or generally act in a ridiculous way. And one could be quite fond of her, but I was quite scared of Kay Carroll, to say the truth. In a way, I've never been scared of Mark.
He's being an arsehole and he's calling me, you know what I mean?
The idea of a manager seems to be against the original ethos of The Fall, so that was a bit problematic. And Tony left. I left. And then a whole new Fall emerged.
Right, noise!
Finally, Bingo Master's Breakout was released, much later than anybody had intended. But there was a certain amount of redemption involved. Some critics got where The Fall were coming from.
Well, it was actually my producer at the time, John Walters, who first heard them. And I think they were a support band at a gig in Croydon. And Walters heard them at that and wrote a letter.
John Walters wrote me a letter and said, you know, you are the worst group I've ever seen in the history of mankind. He's great like that, John Walters voice. You ever meet him? No, he's fucking fantastic. He said you were the worst tuneless rubbish I've ever heard, you know, even worse than Susie and the Banshees. This is what he wrote, though. You were even worse than Susie and the Banshees. I didn't believe it was possible. I mean, he's a gem. What a gem. He said, please do a session.
Get to start again. Pardon? Get to start again.
Start off. Hey. Oh, it's been really good, this.
Get the ball in a quarter.
Oh, really? Having a really good groove through it.
Yeah, yeah. Let me have a word. Sure. We do it again, kids, with a bit fucking, just hit it a bit harder. Rhythm section and the keyboards. Steve, you got to fucking play a bit harder. You got to be in tune and you got to do it on the changes.
You heard a taster of this earlier on. It'll be slightly louder now, I think. I see The Fall and Blindness. To be realistic, you barely need anything else, do you? The 24th session for the programme, as far as we know, the very first of them was recorded at Maida Vale on the 30th of whichever the fifth month is, in 1978, and broadcast...
The Four were on the way to do a John Peel session, and the bass player at the time, he'd had a few ups and downs, a guy called Eric Ferrett, and I think the actual point at which Eric was thrown out of the band was he decided that he didn't want to come along to a Peel session. So I was going along to help him with the gear. And when we got back, I got a phone call from Mark asking me if I wanted to join. Now, bearing in mind, it was my favourite band. I was happy to be a roadie, and I was being asked by Mark Smith to join The Fall, and I was still 16 years old, and I didn't have to think long and hard before saying yes.
Like my granddad used to stand outside prisons and that, and when the release say, you work for me, this is a bit like me. You know what I mean? Or you can play the bass, right, you're in. Don't have auditions or anything. Usually comes off right, actually, touch wood.
I remember once we went to record Live at the Witch Trials and we ended up recording the album in a day. So we were wandering around London, particularly Martin, Carl and I, and I remember saying to me, you're Mark's puppet, aren't you? You know. And I'm like, what? And they're saying, yeah, you'll do anything that he tells you. That's why he got you in. You know, he wanted our mate. And I'm going, oh, I'm sorry, you know, but what can I do? I think they were the seeds of the split in the band and it becoming not a load of mates all pulling together and working together, but Mark wanting to foist his own kind of intentions on everybody else.
It was a matter of control of direction and where they were going. And Mark had a certain idea, I think a fixed idea of how he wanted it to be portrayed.
A year after I joined, Steve and Craig joined. And again, we were all in the same situation. We were there and happy to be, you know, Mark's foils and his backing band, really. Whereas Martin had already got sort of disaffected with the whole thing. You know, him and Mark being the sort of core of it and the real creative force behind it. Martin had realised that he was kind of being sidelined, so he just had enough and went.
It was a drastic old fucking change. The shit my pants. Not really, not literally. I mean, I was scared to death.
The guys who I'd seen carrying the equipment onto the stage were suddenly playing, because Steve suddenly went onto the bass and Craig Scanlon then became a guitarist and Mark moved on to the guitar. So it was this ever-changing kind of movement of The Fall.
I don't know how we ended up going around with them, but just like these really strange people from the other side of Manchester who just seemed to be really into the music.
Is there anybody there? Yeah!
Dragonite was like... It was like a 3 19-year-olds, you know. Not even that, it was like a fucking... Half the group wasn't even allowed to work, apparently. In them days. You're too young.
At the time, we didn't even know how young they were because he would add years to the ages of the group because, you know, they couldn't play in the pub they were playing in or whatever, you know, because they were so young.
I like to get them and tutor them, is the word, I suppose. You understand? It's amazing what you can get out on them. It is incredible.
It wasn't, to be absolutely honest, it wasn't until about, you know, the second or third record, or perhaps even the second or third session, that I started to think, actually, this is really something fairly astonishing.
It fitted into the John Peel show because it was in a way made out of the John Peel show. It was, you know, it was a soundtrack that was based on listening to the John Peel show. The strange sense in the early 70s of listening to this show late at night that was bringing things from around the world that was just so exotic and so strange.
I first heard The Fall in about 1981 on John Peel.
The mad kid ran left side, south side towards me. He was about seven.
You know, you kind of used to listen to it under the bedclothes, that sort of thing, in the middle of the night. And I remember not really liking it.
And the mad kid said, give me the lead, give me the lead, give me the lead.
And I just thought it was annoying and incomprehensible. But then that in itself became fascinating, and the good thing was you get kind of exposed to it.
There was a feminist Austin Maxi parked outside with anti-nuclear, anti-nicotine signs on the side. Anyway, 2 weeks before...
It's that fascinating thing of this superficially ugly music and these really... fascinating, incredibly well thought out words.
The Observer magazine just about sums him up, e.g. self-satisfied, smug.
Mark does use language extraordinarily well and in such a way that you're perhaps made to think more deeply about something which you may have taken for granted, you know, so in the way that a poet or a painter would, where you just make think, actually, I never thought of it like that.
So I reside to bed. I keep bottles and comics stuck by its head. Fuck it, let there be a drought.
He has an amazing eye for the mundane and at the same time for the complete strangeness and otherworldliness of things.
And they will ask me how I wrote Plastic Man, how I wrote Plastic Man.
They're all caught up together. They seem to come from some other place.
Politically, he's neither left nor right. He sometimes espouses views that you might think were right-wing, but then he'll come out with something that's extremely radical. He's neither one or another. He's critical, essentially, of everything. And perhaps suspicious of everything as well.
I don't understand that. No. Which I think is the best way to write. You know. I'm still like that. I don't know what I'm writing about. Half the time. Yeah, I don't want to give my secrets away to these fucking idiots on the BBC. Do you understand that?
We are all living. Legions, so close, my brain is imploding, but everything is all right. I am a rabbit from Germany. I was very happy. I could frolic around all night by the Leipzig station.
But tonight, of course, is a night for the fall, and this is What About Us?
What about us, Shepherdman? What about us, Shepherdman? What about us?
Well, I am tempted to say that this is possibly the best fall session that we've ever had, but I'd probably say that about all of them. That was called What About Us?
Well, this is the lecturing part of the concerts.
Likes to have a dominating influence, I should say like a paternalistic influence over you. Very much like an old Victorian paternalistic boss.
Most of the time we just got on with it and pretty much did as we were told, didn't we?
Yeah. At the beginning, yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah, fucking put the monitors on, for Christ's sake!
Like a matter of life or death, the Fall gig, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It was,
couldn't be seen to enjoy yourself, could you?
No.
I've never been in a room that so crackled with malevolence. I mean, we had our backs to the wall at the far end of the room and were extraordinarily grateful to have done so. I mean, there was so much hostility and rancour.
I remember this one gig we did. It was only a little club, but it was that low that we couldn't hear what was going on the other side of the stage. I couldn't hear Steve and Craig, and they couldn't hear me. So me and Craig swapped over sides.
Up in a room, there's a cloud of smoke. Yeah, fucking get it together instead of showing off.
Well, we got all right. Bollocking when we got off. What are you doing? You know, who do you think you are? You're not in a big rock combo, you know. You're not in U2, but you're swapping sides and messing about.
No, I think Mark's got a different idea. I don't think the other guys quite grasp it. When Mark Riley's from a different background again and his culture is different and he thinks in terms of a conventional group writing nice songs. I don't think Mark Smith wants to be a pop artist or a rock star, you know.
My relationship with Mark Smith started off brilliantly and ended not so brilliantly, really.
You could kind of see it coming, I think. Yeah, there'd been various arguments and, you know, fallings out, and there seemed to be a lot of difference of opinion on how things should be done.
I was probably just a little bit more vocal about it, which would still be not very vocal, and it certainly wouldn't be, you know, fist flailing and fingers pointing. It'd be just like, well, excuse me, but we're not quite happy about that, you know.
Mark Smith was quite critical of Mark Riley's playing and, you know, his attitude.
Mark Riley, he wanted to do stuff his way, and I think that clash.
Well, he wanted to do the hits every night, you know, it's not the group.
It was like there's only one leader in the Fall, you know, Mark, and then I suppose Mark was a bit of a challenge to that.
He said, we're going to Europe in about a month. I went, all right, okay, he says, but I don't want you to come. I was like, what? And he said, yeah, we're going to do it without you. I said, oh, right, okay. He said, if you don't go very well, we'll call you when we get back and you can rejoin the band. And I'm like, right, okay. Like, in a daze, you know. So the next thing I knew, it's about a month later, I think, and they were going to Europe. I've still not had the phone call.
Well, it just carried on, really. Kay was still the manager, and she'd set this American tour up, so we went and did that, and Kay... I don't really want to say that, do I, really? I don't want to say that Mark Kay left Mark, and then he met Bricks all on the same tour. But that's how it happened.
The man has had an expanded...
He answered me and said, I don't like your records much, but what are your lyrics about? You know? So we just got on from there. We got married.
No, that's not what I said. I said... Well, it was like, I thought you guys were brilliant, but I can't understand your lyrics, and they irritate me because I can't understand them. What I meant to say.
The story of the Fall and Marky Smith over the last quarter of a century has so many elements that it's got to have a soap element, and it's got to have the Elizabeth Taylor and Burton element. It's got to have the Paul and Linda McCartney element. It's got to have that kind of weird, odd sexual thing going on. And it was the last thing you would have expected Mark E. Smith to get involved in. You know, having his wife in the band.
No, it's like Fall was one of them things that, you know, it's always on the verge of splitting up, really. So Brick sort of brought a bit of a new life back into it, I think. Different ideas and, you know, wasn't just some miserable blokes from Manchester involved.
What's a computer?
Eat yourself better!
What's a computer?
Eat yourself better!
She brought a particularly different American work ethic into the equation, which is get some money, try for a hit.
I actually sacrificed my principles in order to get the Fall on television.
I wanted to pick somebody who's like a favourite of mine for a number of years, and funnily enough, they've never done national TV in this country before. They've done a couple of local things, but they've never been on national TV, which seemed to me to be shocking. Mm. So I quite wanted to go down in history as the man who put him on TV. So
when they'd said to me, well, you know, how much do you want for coming up today? I said, I'll come up for nothing if you let me pick a band to be on the programme.
It's The Fool!
I think Brix's impact on the band was, one, sartorial. You can see that they suddenly smartened up and they looked like a proposition that could get in the charts. Secondly, I think that she brought a more overt kind of American rock and roll sensibility to it, which softened up a lot of the rough edges of the sound.
That was great, that whole thing when they were suddenly on TV and there was they would have champagne in the dressing room, and it was great, and Mark was wearing those cool suits.
Well, the best thing was meeting Bo Diddley, and he was on this old rock and roll tour or something, and he said it was the biggest load of crap he's ever experienced, and he said but I did see you on that tube show. He said, I was watching it in the hotel, and I was like, the hell? I saw the Elton John and that fucking Paula Yates. What the hell's going on there? There's only one good rock and roll group, and it was you. He goes, and it was you? I'm like, it's Bo Diddley. Because I love Bo Diddley.
Just for a little bit of time, they were like Mr. and Mrs. Rock and Roll, you know, or Mr. and Mrs. Strange Deranged Rock and Roll, you know. It was great.
How long can you carry on, though, because...
would you like us to break up now?
Yes, we will.
You see, if you're in a business where it's all in the pursuit of novelty, I mean, that's cool, that's fair enough, that's cool. But, I mean, no, we're not, no.
He doesn't want to be in a rock band, and I don't think he sees The Fall as a rock band in any sense. So I suppose he's always been wanting to take it into other artistic dimensions.
Now, when I was working in Edinburgh during the summer, lots of arts lovers were dribbling the claret down the cravats and getting very excited over a young dancer by the name of Michael Clark. But when it comes to dancing, I'm a bit of a philistine myself, although I did have to sit up and take notice when I heard that this lad was dancing to music by The Fall.
Because he has a genuine desire for an artistic expression. That's not false. It may be naive or primitive in the sense of the artists which he likes, who are primitive artists, but it's a genuine desire.
All the group, they don't so much the old group, isn't it? It's not that I would, personally. But you couldn't see the group, that was the funniest bit. They stayed up to watch it with all the parents. And all you could see was like Michael Clark bearing his ass on the fucking screen, you know. It's fucking great. It was dead funny.
When a group keeps going as long as The Fall have done, and they have a sound that fundamentally is actually a commercial sound, I mean, at its most sort of fluent, for all its experimental and avant-garde edges, it's a commercial sound because it's about the attack of pop and the attack of rock, and the way that a good lyric has a catchy chorus. Marky Smith has never really, even at his most peculiar, obstinate and strange, veered away from that notion that he wants to reach the masses. And I think that that they kept going for so long that fashion sort of does weird dips, you know, and definitely, you know, at the end of the 80s, it hit that time, the people noticed them.
And they become fashionable, and they started to have bigger audiences. He had never been fashionable, he'd been anti-fashion, and for a very short period he became fashionable.
I was so glad when they got very popular. I remember the time that my mother told me that Elton John was on the tube and said he liked The Fall because it was rock and roll. I thought we were doing something wrong, actually.
An email here from Sean Cordell, and it reads in part, "My youth can be tracked through the development of The Fall." A good way to spend your life, I think, Sean.
Wrong place, sir! Right, sir. Because you have to walk through the vegetarian organic shop in Medeville. Ah! One!
Here's the first take.
Come on, yeah, first take. Put around that. Please! Said I'm a bastard. He is the rich, the young will go up around. Sure, go in and see him.
Well, no, nobody could believe it with Curious Orange that we would dare to put it on in Edinburgh.
What was interesting about the idea of being associated with a ballet was that it seemed one of the few moments of utter logic in the history of The Fall, in a way. You know, a series of clashing illogicalities constantly. Here was something that was quite logical, as if there was a narrative kind of development of The Fall. This is the moment when they're deemed to be quite artistic, really.
I remember going up and just overseeing the recording of it in Edinburgh and seeing the play, and it was great, it was really good. Mad bricks on the handbags and so on. It was just, you sort of smiled all the way through it. You
know. You have the Fall fans at the back in the cheap seats, and then you have the ballet fans down the front with the fingers in their ears.
I thought it was hysterical. It was wild, it was free. The group played really well. Some of the dancing was fantastic. Michael runs a mean troupe. In a similar way to Mark running a mean band.
It's good doing ballet. Because there's a discipline there, you know. You know, you have to be in there at 7 for half an hour. Then you've got to go on stage at 9 o'clock and you've got to get fucking off at 10:30, and that's fucking it. And if you don't get it right, you're fucked. You know, but it's different.
Well, it took Mark to a new level of audience. It made him a favourite, you see. He suddenly became of interest to the chattering classes, to the very middle-class crowd and bourgeois crowd that he doesn't like himself, if the truth be told.
Just as it was going really well, I think Mark just said, you know, I'm not really what you're saying I am. You know, I'm not this thing. I'm Mark E. Smith. I am not like your pet. And just veered off in another direction.
It's a difficult time for Mark, yeah. Goodbye, my
dear. I think she was looking for fame. And Mark, I'm sure he doesn't mind fame, but he's not looking for it in the same way. You know, he doesn't value fame, and he doesn't really value the opinion of a load of famous people who don't particularly care for him.
Mark's personal life was always entangled with the Fall. Last week, after a dynasty, I had crow's feet under my eyes.
Paid 2 days for getting high. They all felt that sorry for me, you know, blokes on the dole in the fucking pub, like, it's a pint, Mark, come on. It's all right, happens to us all, lads, you know, and all that, you know, it's like, it's all right, you know, it's just... These are the finest times of my life. This
is the greatest time of my life. I mean, Mark just seemed to keep working through things, like, whenever things happen like that in his life, he just seems to keep working through it, you know. There was never like, I'm going to take a break for 6 months or anything like that.
This is Craig's tribute to Frank Zappa. Now, we can all laugh about this, but this is his tribute to Frank, and so it's called I'm Frank.
Just about to do our first album for Phonogram, and when Bricks left and Martin Brahma came back for that, for Extra Cake. I mean, we always liked Martin anyway because he was the original guitarist, so we're quite chuffed to have him back in the band, I think.
You know, even with Mark, the strangest things you just take for granted. You know, you would just think, you know, he needed some kind of replacement for Bricks. Maybe the best way would be go back to the very beginning. You know, maybe some strange notion that he could get a bit of the formula back. How dare you assume I want to pile over where you
are? Sorry to be so sure where you are. Couldn't really work out in him rejoining, I don't think, because it was like, when they formed, it was probably equal, you know, he was as much as his band as Mark's, but then when he'd rejoined, he had to take a bit of a backseat.
Damn, the 24th session for the programme, as far as we know. The band have recorded sessions for the programme pretty much every year. The session's been 82, 89, 97, not quite sure how that happened. And then for some reason, there were no more sessions after 98 until 2003. John, can you tell us why this was, it says here? Breakdown in communications, I think, probably the best reason I can give you.
I wrote this script for this. You know, like, I come in and start shouting at you because you haven't on the track. So why have you done the fucking track, son?
Well, we just thought, because you got in the pub, and thought we'd better sort of...
Don't say that to me. Oh, sorry. Don't you say that to me.
We've been working out. Sorry, yeah. Boss. Sorry, boss.
Yes, yeah, sorry, boss. What kind of word is that? You are only a drummer. I am Baxter.
I am only a drummer.
When we think of The Fall as a group, this is one of his more brilliant illusions, that he's kept that idea that The Fall has been going for 25, you know, 30 years. But in a funny sort of way, there's been about 30 or 40 groups that Marky Smith has had.
Well, there'd been so many of them. I mean, you know, go out and do a straw poll, you know. I mean, you could go outside the door now and probably bump into somebody who's been in The Fall.
But he got this thing, his reputation as like, as a sack master, you know what I mean? Keep firing people and all that. This is even like common knowledge now. Even anywhere I go now, people on the street go, "You're the one who's had all them group members." I don't see what the problem is.
Obviously, it's become almost a kind of joke, except to the people concerned. You know, the kind of passage through The Fall, and then, by and large, people then disappear without a trace after they've gone, which always seems to me to be, I don't know whether he's killing them or what.
You have to be a fairly strong person, I think. You know, there was quite a few musicians who didn't, and people around the band who didn't last very long.
It's not like an ordinary group. People do it because they love it. They do it for nothing, or they do it for a lot of money. They just, but they will fucking do it.
I noticed in the 90s that what was happening with Marky Smith was what had once been sort of almost sympathetically registered in a certain area as the old curmudgeon or whatever, or the old fart, but, you know, what a genius. He suddenly became, you know, a fucking asshole, I guess, is the phrase. He suddenly become, you know, not... You realise that there was large parts of Marky Smith that were not very nice.
I don't think he's made his behaviour any better by his use, tremendous use of drugs and speedy drugs, speed and various things that would make his nerves worse, but he's a tough, tough character. It shows on his face. It shows on his face as he's a hardline drinker. It shows on his face as he's a tough guy.
There came a moment when it turned, And that abuse that we'd put down to just him living on the edge and the speed and the booze, it started actually to be something that was really, you know, clearly just affecting him as an individual. That was the moment when you kind of thought, oh my God, you know, what if he wasn't a genius? He was just an old drunken tramp that when he got really drunk started to spout phrases that made a kind of sense, and we read too much into it, you know. Just a little bit of that started to come into it, you know.
The grist, the guitar will make a song, and you'll be dead before I'm born.
I don't think an award like God Like Genius or Lifetime Service Award or anything is relevant to them, because it suggests that it's stopped. And it doesn't look like it ever is going to stop. You know, the point where everybody thought it would end was the mid-90s, when he didn't seem to be able to hold a lineup together. He looked terribly ill, and you really felt like you were living in the last days.
It was turned into a bit of a shambles by this time. I think everybody had admit that. There was a lot of financial trouble the band were in, you know, which was kind of affecting everything. Gigs got cancelled and row in the sound check and we wouldn't get to the gig. And you know, the writing was on the wall, really, I think. You know, but I don't know why we went to America. It seemed like a good idea at the time. My last gig was at Brownies, which is like pretty well known as a disaster. A lot of aggression on stage, and I think the odd microphone being thrown about and kicked over. And
well, they started on me and I started on them, so that's fair enough.
By this time I'd had enough, I think, you know. I maybe should have got out of it a couple of years before.
That band had just run out of steam, and yet, because it was Steve, because it was Carl, I think he had a loyalty to those people.
All the equipment was pushed over, and Mark was sort of fighting with Carl, and they trashed the drum kit.
So they attacked me, so I ended up in jail, but at the end of the day, I think it's probably the best thing that ever happened. That scrap on the stage. Because, you know, it's like I felt like I was carrying these old fellas around all the time. I really did. They're all about my age, and they're shit. There's no two ways around. You know, they're crap.
A fucking animal on drums and a fucking idiot.
He'd let it go too far. He'd fallen out with his group. He was drinking too much, and he was gradually losing contact. He had no various management, and no friends were working with him.
Couldn't get any work, couldn't get any jobs in Europe or America, anything, zip. Britain even.
The point about him is that you've got to play the game a little bit, and he knows that. You can't completely ditch everything and expect your fame to carry you through.
You desolate singer.
At Brownies tonight.
I think this after that low point, he realised that you have to have a band, that he was known. He went back to the basics of his success.
When you just think, you know, he can't put, he's too drunk, he hasn't got a band, he's forgotten his lyrics, who the hell is he? He'll end up putting together a set that's utterly mesmerising, and you realise what a great artist he truly is.
What he produced was rather good. He came up with one or two incarnations of The Fall that were very, very talented.
There were so many people that would love to be in that band that are great musicians that could join it. And often you think, God, just get someone in, they can, and sort it out. You know, that there are people that would contribute to this that are brilliant. But that would be exactly the wrong thing to do.
Don't want Fall fans, you know. Because I've had fill-ins, you know, blokes who like The Fall and filled in on bass, I guess. And they play like The Fall, what they think The Fall is, and it's rubbish.
First time I met Mark, I was about 15 years old, because he used to come drinking in the same building that used to be my youth club, and kind of saw him on and off for about 4 years. And then I just got a phone call from a friend of Mark's who was giving me a ring asking me if I wanted to come and do a day's work for the Fall in Manchester. We went down, recorded some tunes off the Unutterable album, and I think on the strength of that performance that I did on that day, he kind of offered me the job.
Everybody who works with the Fall is very regular people, and I won't pick them otherwise.
He's got Eleanor now in the band, and that has really focused down again. Another very strong woman, knows exactly what she wants to do.
I didn't want to join for obvious reasons, being the wife and so, but then I found it quite easy to play with them, and you know, I just stuck with it.
I mean, I treat Eleanor completely different when she's in the group. I don't, it's not like, treat her like everybody else. A bit hard sometimes, you know.
I don't think it's important to Mark. He doesn't differentiate between women and men as humans, as people, and certainly not as musicians, so it makes no difference.
No, women are a lot better, actually, at a lot of things, musically. They just take it up. You can just give them an idea. A lot of fellas, you know, they want to know the mechanics of it all the time, which I can't explain to them, because believe it or not, I still don't know a D from an E or a F from an A. I know an A and an E, it's about...
And this email says, play a Fall track for Mike and Froome and Ben in London, us old saddos, and to all the young Fall fans, big up, and Spencer is a top Fall drummer.
See what I mean?
It's great, shut it. What I'm saying is we could improve on that.
We should start somewhere. We have to do wrong place again, do we?
Creatively, it's the best band to be in. It really is, because the songs are written, that we release, some are written by individuals and some are written by the entire band. It gives you a lot of leeway.
Turn my guitar up a little bit.
I just give them the freedom, which they don't get in, you know, like rock bands and all.
At the end of the day, you know, once you hand that song over and he's sung over it, it's his song, it's his tune, you know. So, and he'll put his nice little he'll do his thing to it that makes it that a bit special.
I love the way he reduces the basic idea of the Fall to being, you know, raw sound with weird singing over the top. You know, he's not a singer, but he's one of the greatest rock singers there's ever been, and his whole way of turning the drunken karaoke singing with the at the end of everything has become unbelievably powerful.
I mean, singing's getting very good, actually. I'm talking about... I'm getting really good at singing, actually. After 20 fucking 5 years. No, I really am.
Well, this has been just magnificent, I think, and thanks, Mark, and the rest of you for making an old man very happy. Two tunes from The Fall, Wrong Place, and The Moves, I Can Hear the Grass Grow.
Come on!
The latest band now is just fantastic. Who can you say that? 27 years, and he's got a stunning band, and I saw them a week ago, and there were like five new songs in the set, and they were the best five songs.
One of the sort of classic moves in the last 5 years on stage has been him turning up people's amps, switching bits of kit off.
Mark does a lot of live mixing on stage, like he moves microphones, puts it in the bass drum or so, and I think There's no other band that does this, like a live mix by the singer.
What's he doing? What's he doing now? And he's coming over, he's messing with your amp, and it's like, I don't know what he's doing. But in his head, you know, he's right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this.
No, so back him up a bit, you know, the group matter, not the crowd. I'm not bothered about the crowd, I've never ever been, you know. They don't interest me.
The experience of being in the Fall will give you the most fantastic time of your life that you would never have had in any other band, but at the same time, you also get some of the most frightening experiences. I mean, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that. It's very easy to kind of assume that when you go to a gig and all these people have turned up, you know, that you're partly responsible for this. And that's when you start your slippery slope downhill, because once you start thinking that, you know, you've got to come into this band and you've got to know your role.
God, I will tell you how it will change you.
There was a song on Hex Induction Air, Hit Priest, that they redid on a Curious Orange soundtrack, which has got this line, "He is not appreciated." And every encore for Time Immemorial now has involved him handing the mic out to a member of the audience who can then shout, "He is not appreciated." And I think that there's a kind of feedback loop there of the audience flattering Marquis Smith, saying, "We know how good you are, but you're playing to these kind of crowds at this level." But there's also a bit of flattery going the other way. It's one of those rare moments where he is approving of the audience and saying, "But you know I'm really good."
It's part of him that is so fucking furious with his obscurity and his poverty, considering how brilliant he is, and then part of him that really, really just wouldn't want it any other way.
I think there's a lot of deception going on sometimes with Mark. He wants an audience, he wants to be appreciated, he deserves to be appreciated, or feels he does. And some of it's just showbiz. I'm an anti-star, but I shine brightly.
He lives in his own weird little world, and it's not a world I particularly want to be part of, but, you know, it's Mark Smith. What he does is brilliant, and you can never write him off.
It is to Manchester's glory that, yes, we have Ian Curtis and Sean Ryder and Ian Brown and, let's forget the Gallagher brothers, but without Marquis, that heritage would be a much, much poorer place. And the fact that I'm calling him heritage, he'll fucking hate, so I'm glad I said it.
I respect Mark for continuing to beat his own path through the jungle that is life. You know, even if there's a well-worn path 3 or 4 feet to the left or right of him, he's still going to go down the middle, and that's got to be good.
I've got plenty to say, you know. I'm going to carry on saying that. Okie doke. Check the record.